Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Merrill Crowley from Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, Greg Ginder from FC Stone in Chesterfield, Missouri, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. Okay, gentlemen, let's begin with our normal question, which is to get a list of items we should discuss for the day. I have a feeling it might be hard to find things, but we'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Well, I think we definitely need to be talking about planting intentions, maybe what we all think USDA will come out and what it might take to get to a loftier corn number, if you will. It'd probably be a pretty good discussion. And then, you know, talk a little bit about the ethanol numbers that we posted yesterday, second week, you know, in a row that we were under 100 million bushels. So I think we ought to maybe take that up as well.
And Merrill Crowley?
I'm looking at the other side. When are we going to see these lows hit? And for wheat, mainly if it's the leader, and perhaps corn and beans.
And Greg Ginder.
Let's see. I mean, I think that definitely the planting intentions is an important point to kind of cover today. Also, looking at the one of the things that I watch very closely is the export program for all the commodities. So there's definitely some interesting information from ethanol to corn and beans.
And finally, did they leave anything for you, Dan, other than the charts?
Well, my question is, will the trade believe what USDA publishes? And when will the planting delays in the southern Corn Belt become a factor, I guess, if they become a factor?
And do you have an idea when that'll happen?
Well, my guess is probably next week, if things, because once you get past March 15th, you begin to, it gets a little dicey planting Mississippi corn and Delta corn, and it's wet all the way down to the northern half of Mississippi is wet. Tennessee, Kentucky, the whole Ohio River Valley is saturated. So this is the time of year that they begin to start scratching, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Matt Bennett, you were in Phoenix, Arizona at the Commodity Classic last week, had around 800 farmers and others that you could get hold of. Did you talk to anybody down south, and what kind of conditions are they worried about, if any?
Well, there was a couple of guys, you know, from Louisiana that were talking about, you know, they were able to get a little bit of planting done, but that they were kind of in a wait-and-see mode as well. And they had some concerns, but I will say that the guys that I talked to, there was two gentlemen that said that they weren't going to plant a whole lot of corn this year. They were actually going to be pushing their bean acreage fairly hard. So, you know, I found that interesting. I've been hearing that a fair amount from people in the seed industry. And, you know, I think that what they had to say kind of mirrored a little bit of, you know, what I've been hearing.
So you have two sources of confirmation for for more soybean acres. You suggested we should talk about the planting intentions. Prospective planting report, of course, is due out at the end of the month of March. You were talking to folks that were in the deep south. It wouldn't be unusual for them to change. And their acreage numbers for soybeans I don't think would be that great. But if you add everything up around the perimeter of the primary growing regions, could we have a fairly substantial change, do you suppose?
You know, I think compared to last year, I mean, you look last year and the outlook for them was actually, I believe, 4.2 million acres low. You know, I don't know that they're going to be that low. I mean, I've said a couple times, you know, we've talked that I thought that they were definitely low at 83.5 based upon people I'm talking to. whether it be farmers or people in the, again, the seed industry, it sure does appear that we have, you know, we will have more acres of beans this year. Now, just how much is going to be interesting? I don't know whether we're going to call it switching. I mean, a lot of guys you talk to in your major corn production states have kind of switched from a corn-on-corn rotation, you know, predominantly for several years, to a whole lot of guys have started going with the 50-50. So those acres are just going to flip-flop. But I think whenever you just mentioned, some of your fringe areas, some of your outlying areas, I do think that those are going to probably be fairly heavy beans, and it's going to be very interesting. But I think that we're going to go at least 86 million acres on beans, in my opinion.
Merrill, your considerations on acreage at this time?
Well, it looks to me like we could get up maybe to 88 million bushels of corn. On the beans, I'm kind of wondering, the general weather pattern out there looks to be staying dry, and I'm not sure if they're going to start maybe pushing some more sorghum out in those areas versus beans. But usually drier weather leads to corn planting. The sorghum price is high. We're having really good exports out to China with the sorghum, so you might be surprised some of those soybean acres might get switched to sorghum.
Are those acres for sorghum, Merrill, located more along the Mississippi River system so that they can be exported more easily? What parts of the country might normally grow them? I know there, of course, are some hot spots, for instance, near St. Louis, but that, of course, feeds into the brewery system there.
Right, and I don't think where I'm looking at some of the change in the acres that I would be looking for to happen would be more in your northern tiers and Kansas out west. And no, those wouldn't have a real good access to the Gulf. On the other side of the coin, if the rails were working out to the PNW, that would be a good place to ship it for China delivery.
And naturally, that's one of those things that has been exported. And Greg Ginder from FC Stone, you mentioned the export market. If you've been watching the sorghum numbers on the weekly basis and what USDA reports, and I think most of this goes out the PNW or the Pacific Coast, that those numbers are substantial in USDA. And in Ag Forum said they're going to continue to grow for at least a little bit and then plateau at a much higher level than we've ever seen before. I'm really wondering about your total thought about export for all kinds of commodities. You mentioned those up front, but if you want to start with sorghum, that would be good.
Sure. I would definitely say that the sorghum is definitely one of the most sought after commodities that is, I've seen this year at the basis level alone would basically say that. I certainly do believe there will be more sorghum acres because when seed guys are asking me if they should start carrying Milo seed, that's kind of a dead giveaway right there. As far as the export business goes on Milo, it is it was definitely robust. I don't know if it was so much as it was hard to find, so they had to pay up for it. But certainly China and Mexico and the Asian Rim in general was definitely, that was a very highly sought after commodity. As far as corn and bean exports, I would definitely say that beans have been outperforming last year's, at least by what I've seen thus far, if we kept this pace up. Corn, unfortunately, has been a little bit of a lagger, and I think that has a great deal to do with South American corn crop, Black Sea corn. All of those seem to be a little bit cheaper by comparison to what the U.S. has to offer, whether that be the dollar or just general commodity prices. You know, it is certainly a noticeable difference. On wheat has unfortunately been the unfortunate lagger as far as the export system goes. We are definitely not competitive worldwide with the wheat. It's been a very disappointing export system with all the wheat that we've had last year. But that kind of wraps it up. And then ethanol is also a definite interesting commodity as far as export goes. We've done really an amazing amount of ethanol business, whether it be to Canada or Brazil or India. It seems like everybody's starting to pick up blend standards. Come March 16th, actually, Brazil will move from 25% to 27%. So that is going to be definitely a wide open market for us going forward for ethanol.
Given that, stocks of ethanol, I think, Matt Bennett, have been building. And you made mention that production of ethanol in the United States for the second week in a row was under 100 million.
Yeah, it's under 100 million, and I think this has been called into question for quite some time now. I think a couple of the meetings that we've done, I believe both of us have pointed out, the farm doc does some really good work talking about where this may go, and Dr. Good and Scott Irwin have basically said that yes, due to the renewable fuel standards, even though we're going to be looking at probably a little bit of a cut from the five and a quarter billion bushels USDA is projecting. Even though we're looking at a cut, they think we're going to go through at least 5 billion bushels due to the RFS. And so, whenever I look, the last 3 months, we haven't been within 2 million bushel of what we used this past week. I mean, this is a low for quite some time. And so it's something that people are probably going to be looking at. I think what I would say is that we're probably going to be looking at a little bit of a laggard of a time here. But, not only gasoline demand, but ethanol demand is probably going to be picking up here in the next, 8 to 10 weeks. And I do think that that may end up giving us a little bit of a boost. And it was nice to see that our stocks were, were actually a little bit down this past week, which almost every week in the last couple, 3 months, it's been building just a little bit every week.
Just so your thought process here as we go into the primary driving season and with, I suppose, the price of crude oil back in the $50 range and ethanol plants more profitable, that things will look better for ethanol and corn usage in that sector?
Probably going to look better than what they're going to look maybe for the next month. I do think that this 97.75, I think, is what we had that was released yesterday. I think you're going to see numbers similar to that and maybe a little easier, yeah. At the same time, we needed 101.8 or 0.9, I think, to stay on pace. And so, obviously we missed that by 4 million bushels. So we're going to fall behind, I think, here for a little bit. But I do think that it's going to look pretty rough for a while. But I think we will be able to creep back up. A lot of it's going to depend on the individual plants and what kind of hedging practices they've used, how well off the plan is, whether it's a paid-for plan. So a lot of things are going to be at play here.
Hey, one of the things, and I don't know who wants to take this up, but that Chris Hurt had mentioned in his pinning on the FarmDoc Daily website earlier this week that was posted on Monday, was the boom and bust cycle for pork producers, prices that is, and the sheer number of animals that is around, and how most of the trade missed PEDV and its true impact, that not nearly so much production was lost last year. If I remember correctly, I think that number was down 2%. But the number of hogs around this year has appears to be really pretty strong. Might, Merrill, we see something in the grain stocks report when that comes out at the end of the month as well that would reflect better usage of corn and soybean meal, I suppose, soybeans by proxy in those numbers?
I would certainly think so. If you look at, like you said, the amount of hog numbers, now cattle numbers aren't really going up. I think they're expected to be just a little bit shorter than last year. But your hog numbers and the poultry numbers are, I think I saw poultry numbers 3% higher. So, yeah, you should see more feed usage for these animals coming down the road.
Different question on the same topic for you, Dan, because I know CGB is part of a cooperative feeding into Japan for their livestock sector. Are the numbers there, do you know, looking bigger, smaller? What kinds of what do we know about that sector and their potential usage?
Well, their demand for corn and PDGs and whatnot is pretty level. It's pretty steady. So that would indicate that everything is, pretty much unchanged over the past year or so. I don't see any, big changes of corn demand going into Japan. So that would, you know, pretty well imply that we're not seeing any big changes in overall livestock production.
And so your export, your thoughts on the export market is that things would be status quo from what USDA has been saying about exports for corn in this marketing year and into the next one?
Well, at least for now, that's the way I would size it up, that they're, you know, like I said, they don't have a, they don't, probably don't have the volatility in market prices that we do, because they're such a small country and a large population, and everything pretty well gets consumed there. I mean, they're, that country by itself is always, you know, worry about having enough food supply. So it looks pretty steady, at least the way I would sum it up. Not a lot of big changes in anything.
Greg Ginder, when you watch the export market there from St. Louis, do you see any changes coming?
No, not really. I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that we're looking at a, I think it's status quo. I really do. Given all the corn in the world right now, you just don't, it's not a dramatic notice. You know, there isn't really anything, there's no red flag to say, you know, we're going to go one way or the other. I think business will just continue on throughout this year. We should probably hit whatever I think we'll probably hit what the government has got proposed for us, and we'll see what they put in front of us for next year, but I can't imagine it would be a deviation very far from where we are right now.
Merrill Crowley, you mentioned lows in the marketplace. I think as it relates to wheat, what are your thoughts there?
Well, initially, wheat, if wheat's the leader, we've just seen wheat break the July lows for last fall, where we made lows of corn and beans. And the continuous chart is looking for lows to hit somewhere around 466. Breaking that, you know, we're going to move down to 425. We already have seen the corn-wheat ratio drop below a dollar, and that's starting to make wheat competitive in the feed market, which would then pressure corn prices. And, of course, if you pressure corn prices, you've got meal prices being pressured not only by Brazil exports and Argentine exports, but by the competition and the feed. So I'm kind of looking at where are we going to see a low in wheat. My thinking is we should see something when this wheat comes out of dormancy. Now, currently we're hearing all these people talk about, well, it's not quite as bad as we originally thought. And I thought it was interesting is yesterday that the Russian crop was put at 100 million metric ton for the total grain crop, with about half that being wheat, and that's on the high side. And their comment was they didn't see that much winter kill, but the Ukraine winter wheat is likely to fall 21 to 22 million metric ton versus 24 last year, and those two things don't seem to make sense for me. Adding to this, if you're going to go into spring wheat for whatever winter kill, you're looking at Russia and the Ukraine seeing much higher fertilizer prices, and I just can't see how they're going to plant more corn, more wheat. So if we don't see the wheat prices bottom soon here in the next month, I guess I'm saying I don't see how we can see the corn and beans make a low either.
So you're pointing us towards the global marketplace, and I'm thinking that Dan probably has considered both the domestic and global numbers in his cycles and charts, and wondering where you, Dan, believe each of these markets might be at this time, and if one of them appears to be a leader, whether it's corn, soybeans, or wheat.
Well, when you look at world fundamentals on the supply side, you probably would have to say that wheat might have the greatest potential because it doesn't have as much surplus inventory around. And if we would get into any kind of weather issues with the U.S. crop here, I don't know. The trade doesn't seem to be too worried about these record-breaking temperatures that we're having right now. I guess we must have enough snow cover on that nobody's too worried about any kind of winter kill. But That is, you know, if something is going to take off and surprise everybody, probably wheat might end up being the leader. But it sure has, you know, we had a good charge out of that February low, and then all of a sudden here we just kind of fizzled, and everything's kind of falling apart on it.
Usually at this time of year, Matt Bennett, we find something that really begins to change the fundamental marketplace. That might come, of course, in the prospective plantings numbers, but the trade tends to have a sense about these issues prior to the end of March report. Do you have some thoughts on what this might be?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously last year during meeting season, it was pretty, you know, it was pretty desolate times going to some of these meetings, and this year hasn't been a whole lot different. I mean, you know, you're looking at 50-cent lower spring insurance price, and guys are kind of scratching their heads and wondering on what I call high input situations where they're going to be able to eke out a profit. You know, what's going to get this market to rally like last year? I know a lot of guys are asking, hey, are we going to get that opportunity like we had last year? Well, you know, I sure hope we do, but I think if we do, a person's got to understand it's probably going to come, you know, on in my opinion, uncertainty about the 15 crop. And, you know, obviously acreage could come in anywhere. You know, as Dan said, who knows if everyone will buy into it if it's a harebrained number. But if we end up with a, you know, say an 87.5 or 88 or under one of those, both of those numbers, I think that you could definitely give a shot in the arm to the corn market. You know, but I would assume that a lot of those acres are probably going to result in a large soybean acreage number. And so, you know, I don't know if you continue with what we're seeing this week with the weakness in the soybean market, if you can expect to get a whole lot of strength in the corn market, especially if you add acreage to an already, you know, supply side burdensome situation.
All right. I think it's time for our final words. Merrill Crowley, I want to start with you out of Watseek, Illinois. What is your final word for this edition of Commodity Week?
Well, I don't think something we've been taking a look at or have mentioned is a lot of years we have these low prices, and it's a situation where the farmers basically can't make money at the current prices, that we see roughly 1.5 to 2 million acres go either into pasture or go fallow. They just don't plant it. So I'm looking for that to be somewhat supported for our acreage report.
And Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds?
Well, I think moving through March, there's liable to be some volatility. It's going to be very interesting to see what these acreage numbers come in at. A lot of people are going to be keeping a very close eye, though, as well upon the weather. If we are able to get in the field in decent time, in some of these areas that really struggled, for instance, last year in the upper Midwest, if those guys can get in the field a little bit sooner, obviously there might be some acreage implications there. But I think to get the acreage that you need on corn, in my opinion, we're going to need not only good weather, but we're going to need a little bit of a rally as well.
Greg Ginder of FC Stone.
Yeah, I would just probably touch on basis levels here for my final thought. With as much corn as in the country and on the farm and things of that type, not to mention the ground piles that are repicking up, St. Louis is still in the overs on basis levels, but the concern is as soon as we either get in the field or get out of the field, these basis levels will start to erode. Given the majority of the grain that needs to yet come to market, and if our export or our ethanol system is still a little bit lagging, you know, we could see some basis levels that we haven't seen in a while on spot corn. So everything else basis wise looks to be pretty good, including beans. So we'll just see what the corn wants to do.
And finally, Dan Zwicker.
Well, it's all about weather. We've got adequate supplies of inventory on hand, both domestically and worldwide. So I think it's going to be weather, and that's going to have to spark some kind of rally, or otherwise the market is going to be awfully heavy as we go on into the spring planting season. The other thing is the outside influences of the whole situation in the Mideast, the Soviet-Ukraine situation, that could be something that could blow up in everybody's face, and how the market reacts to that, that could be interesting and no doubt would be somewhat volatile.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to the panelists for this March 5th edition of the program, including Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, and from FC Stone in Chesterfield, Missouri, Greg Ginder. Thank you for listening. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.